I have Sandy and Thelma from the Sacred Conversations Book Club in Battle Creek here with me today. And first of all, since there's two of you especially, I'll have you introduce yourselves. Tell a little about who you are and how you became involved in this book club.
My name is Sandy Whaling, and I've been in the book group about 10 years. And it started with a group of four churches getting together. Two were predominantly Black and two were predominantly white. And we had about four meetings together and then decided to ask the facilitator if we couldn't meet in small groups. And so we began to do that. And then our small group decided we didn't want to stop when the program was over and that we wanted to continue meeting. So that's how the book group started, and I have been with them all that time.
Thelma?
Well, I'm Thelma Vaughn, and I was not a part of that original four church groupings. I was a member of one of the churches, but didn't get involved until after the small groups began, or the small group began its book club. And it didn't actually start as a book club. I think the people involved just wanted another platform to have connection. So we started to read a book, and the book that they started with was a book that I was thoroughly involved in and loving, The Shack.
I've read it. That's
yes.
A very moving and thoughtful book.
And a lot to discuss.
Yeah.
When you talk about religion or race relations or whatever, there was a lot of different things that were going on in that reading. So it was an opportunity for us to start off on a really high note with everybody having something to contribute and learning.
I'm familiar with it. Saw the movie, too. Did you by chance as a group view that?
Yes, I think we did go to the and I think I ended up seeing the movie three or four times. But it was a very good start for us, which then led to other powerful books.
So how did the name come about, Sacred Conversations, and what makes a conversation sacred?
Well, I think the whole idea started, I believe, with the United Congregational Church, UCC. And so a minister in town got together with the other three ministers and wanted to deal with race issues. It was at the period of time where Jeremiah Wright, the minister, Obama's minister in Chicago.
I was going to ask about that. Yeah, what was going on
and
that
so,
inspired this?
Yep, the Congregational Church decided that their churches really needed, if they wanted to, spend some time talking about race and getting together so that we had two different viewpoints and two different perspectives. So, and as far as the sacred goes, the biggest thing for me is the safe space.
Yeah.
So it's a place you can be really authentic. It's a place where you can help each other learn without fear of being degraded or called out.
So were these kind of like rules or guidelines that you set out at the beginning, or are they just kind of organically, naturally evolved that way?
Well, part of the format of the book group is that there are no rules. And so it was kind of, I think, just built in with the start of the group, that we could say what you were feeling or what you thought and not have to worry about somebody taking your word somewhere else or being offended by it, because this was our safe space.
So kind of an unspoken rule there, that you have to respect each other and keep it within the group.
That's how the sacred has morphed.
Uh-huh.
I think the beginning it was sacred because it was the four churches coming together.
I see.
But since then that has developed into sacred, safe, honest kind of relationships.
Give us a profile of who are the people that come to these meetings.
Well, we have, it's almost half and half now with white people and Black people.
Male, female?
We had two males, and now we have one male, and we're always looking for another male.
That seems to happen with book clubs. I've always puzzled why.
We're all around the same age, so even though a couple people have part-time jobs or maybe even a full-time job, we're all able to meet together on a Monday at noon.
Every week. Wow. Mm-hmm. Do you have a new book every week?
Oh, no.
I was going to say, speed readers.
No. Depends on the book. There are some that take us quite a while to get through. We did The Color of Law, which took a while, because that's kind of like a textbook rather than just a, you know,
so
a
you
fun
take
read.
On nonfiction as well as fiction?
Oh, yes. Okay. Yes. We have quite a variety of books that we read, and sometimes we have to go to the fiction to be a release from the nonfiction that we've worked on.
It gets
on.
Heavy.
Yes,
yeah.
It gets really heavy sometimes.
Bring me into one of these meetings. You say that it's a safe place. Do we get into debates? Do we get into tears? Do we tell personal stories?
I think that was the big, for me as a white person, that was the most important thing, was the stories and the relationships.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter what kind of book we're discussing. We're always learning about the other person. And so they're bringing their perspective on that book, whether it's fiction or nonfiction. So we've done, I think we're at, 60, 70 books, something like that. And we start the group with a prayer. And Thelma usually starts us off with a prayer. And then it has, her word morphed is great. It has morphed into a lot of sharing at first of maybe things that you think would interest the group.
Yeah.
Events that are coming up. We used to do a lot with politics, and we've kind of moved a little bit away from that.
Exhausting.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Yes. So we all bring that in. So there's a period of time and moving in lots of different directions. And sometimes now we have to even say, it's time to discuss the book. But I think that's valuable for all of us because you're free again to share your opinions. And I don't know that we have debates.
I don't think it's debates.
It isn't debates.
Okay.
It's just it's sharing.
It's more of a sharing kind of thing. And if my opinion about a particular issue is totally different from yours, it's okay.
Yeah.
And I think that falls back into that sacred thing again, where we expect there to be differing views on issues. And to be able to accept each other, even with the differences, is a part of what I think this group has allowed us to grow into. We started, I don't know, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, that we would celebrate birthdays once a month. And those people who had birthdays that month, everybody else would bring in whatever, and we'd have like potluck lunch. And that person that day was to tell their story.
Ah,
tell us something.
The birthday person. I see.
Yes. Tell us something that perhaps we didn't know about your upbringing or your childhood or your present life or incidents that you may have had with this idea of black and white in this country and so forth. And it gives us a chance to see each other sometimes a little bit differently because the way I see you when I see you. I may not know what your story is.
Sure, yeah.
And it makes it really clearer as we talk to each other that we can look at people even outside the group now and recognize just because you see me doesn't mean you really see me.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So it's been really powerful, I think.
I would think so, too. Man, we need to clone these book clubs. Did you?
We did try. And out of our trying, one, there is another one. I don't even know what they're called. Maybe just Sacred Conversations, or I don't know what they're called. And so one came out. But there are an awful lot of people that express an interest. And, of course, we only feel as far as discussion that we can only have so many people or you lose.
Agreed.
Yeah. Some people don't get to talk.
Is that why you went to smaller groups?
In the beginning, it was more getting to know people. In the beginning, when we asked for the smaller groups, because there were 50 of us sitting around in a big circle, well, you can't get to know anybody that way.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think once we started the small group and began as a Sacred Conversations book group, our feeling was not that we didn't want other people, but everybody needs to be heard. And when you get above a certain amount of people,
yeah,
that's not going to happen. So
your quieter people will stay quiet.
Right. Yeah. So we've tried to keep it maybe at 15 and below. And I think right now maybe there's 12 or 13 of us, something like that.
Yeah.
And for some people, it may be difficult to have some of the conversations that we have about race. And so they may start with us and then depart. So because there's some hard work involved and there's learning that trust that you can go ahead and share and have somebody help you move along your racial journey.
Yeah.
So some people, it doesn't appeal to some people. But it is interesting that we can't get more groups started because people really want to join our group.
Well, maybe there's a certain dynamic that your group has. But so talk about how stories have power, how stories can break down barriers, or maybe how you evolved yourselves by listening to others' stories, perhaps change your views or some kind of evolution in how you see other races.
Wow.
Big question.
Yeah, that is a big question. And it's kind of interesting because the initial makeup of the group, there were several, maybe three people that belonged to the church that I belonged to that were a part of the group. Mm-hmm. But then there were other people that I had never met before, people from First Congregational or First Press that I didn't know at all. Mm-hmm. And on initial impact, I mean, on initial gathering, conversation is very polite and very guarded and
sure,
so forth.
Yeah.
And as things move on, even while we were reading the first book, The Shack, there were areas that you could see were very powerful that people had read, and other people were perceiving it totally differently. And I thought, well, why can't you see what I see? And that was sort of an epiphany for me that I could read the same book that you're reading and you get a totally different message than what I got. And then as we continued to read and discuss and so forth, because a lot of times if you're talking about a book or a character in the book, what you're actually sharing is more of you than that character.
That's absolutely true.
And
yeah.
So as conversation goes on, you begin to see this person that I perceive to be one way, that may not be who they are. And I mean, not in a bad way.
Right.
But it just is not who they are.
Yeah.
And I have to be okay to let them be who they are.
Yeah.
Of course, they have to be okay to let me be who I am, too.
Which
is not always a comfortable thing.
Right.
And which is why some people come and they're with us for a while and then they're not.
Do you think it's because they're not willing to see other perspectives or to change their minds? Or is it perhaps it's too difficult to talk about painful things?
I think it's both of those things.
Yeah.
And I wanted, and I hope it's okay with Thelma to share this. Just recently did I realize that she had come out of college to Battle Creek as a teacher when they were recruiting African-American teachers. And I was kind of blown away by her story.
Mm.
So, I mean, I've known her for 10 years now, and that was the first time I had heard, and we had all heard, that particular story.
Yeah.
And what it was like for her to get off a bus in Dowling, Michigan,
a
as
Sunday
a black
afternoon.
Person. Yes. It was just, to me, I never, never gave it a thought.
Yeah.
That it might be difficult for an African-American person to come to Battle Creek, Michigan. I just didn't think about it. And so that really made me stop. And here after 10 years was a story that I needed to hear.
Share a little of that story, Thelma. What was that like?
Well, I had been recruited to come and teach in Battle Creek at Hampton University. Well, it was Hampton Institute at that time. Mr. Dan Patton, who was the principal of one of the schools here, was a part of that recruiting team. And so I thought Battle Creek sounded like a really great place to be. At the time, I was living in Philadelphia in school in Virginia. And I thought, hey, Michigan is just not too far away from Philly, so I can get back and forth to see about my mother and so forth. So I figured Battle Creek would be a good place to be. And so the directions that I was given when I got my contract was to come to Dowling, Michigan, which is closest to Clear Lake Camp, because at that time all of the teachers had an orientation week before school started out at the camp.
It's also a very tiny town. I actually
yes.
lived there once.
Yes.
Did you really?
Oh.
Well, in Philadelphia, I was under the impression that Battle Creek was another city, like not maybe not as big as Philly. I didn't want a big, big town.
Yeah.
So when I got on the bus, because I came out here by myself, I got on the bus. We got to Detroit. I was cool, you know,
yeah.
skyscrapers. I can understand this. We pull out of Detroit and start coming down 94, and there's cornfields. And I'm thinking, maybe not. So we finally get to Battle Creek, and there's a couple of pretty tall buildings in Battle Creek. So I thought, well, that might not be bad. But they said I needed to change buses in Battle Creek to go to Dowling so I could get to the camp. And when we left Battle Creek, and it was absolutely nothing, I thought, it's got to get better than this. And the bus driver, after a time, pulls over to the side of the road, and there is nothing out there but a little service station. And he says, well, this is Dowling. And I'm thinking, that can't be so. That can't be true. He lets me off the bus. This is a Sunday afternoon. The gas station is closed.
Blink and you miss it, as they say.
Yes.
Yeah.
This is before cell phones. You know, so I'm thinking, oh, God, what am I going to do? And I'm sitting on the side of M37 with my suitcase.
Mm.
So there was a house across the street. I figured I will go and see if these people will let me use a phone. And if not, on the next bus going east, I'm going home. And I walked across the street and this lady said, well, yes, you can use my phone. And I called and Mr. Arthur Angood came and got me. Took me down to the camp. We had a wonderful week. But at the end of that week, we had to find some place to live. And at that time in Battle Creek, there were not lots and lots of apartment opportunities.
Yeah.
So we got a list of people that would be willing to rent to new staff, new teachers. And so I looked at my list and I called this number that was on the list that was recommended. And as I asked the lady if she had, you know, I was a new employee at Battle Creek Public Schools, and I was looking for a place to stay. And the lady says to me, are you colored? You sound colored. We don't rent to coloreds. And I thought, is this Michigan? Am I in Michigan? I hung up the phone, and fortunately, there was another person there that had gotten connections to rent a house. So there were three of us that were able to go in with her and rent this house. But I was totally appalled.
Mm.
Now, now this was August of 68, and I had made assumptions I should not have made, that if I was given a job here and I was given a list of approved places to rent, that this would already have been vetted. And apparently it hadn't, or somebody slipped up or whatever.
Yeah.
But we did get a good place to stay. It was a great start. But it was quite a shocker for me in Battle Creek, because that was not what I expected here.
Yeah.
Well, and then for me to hear that there hadn't been good plans made by the white people who were running the school district.
Probably never occurred to them,
because
it's not something they face.
Right. And it didn't occur to me that anybody would have her experience. Now, maybe I hadn't thought it through, you know, well enough, and I knew it was years ago, but I thought they dropped her off in Dowling, Michigan, and there she was. So that was a whole new thing for me to start thinking about.
Yeah,
and we come across this stuff, mm-hmm. whether it's in a book, whether it's sharing of stories, that certainly give me pause and let me know I have a long way to go on my journey mm-hmm. for racial justice in this country.
Name some other books that you're reading these days. And do you try to read current books, or does it span all time periods?
I think there's a span.
I do, too. In fact, sometimes we stay away from a brand new book just because it's only in hardback. And
I
if there's
you.
Two copies at the library, then everybody has to buy a copy.
Yeah, I hear you.
Yeah.
We're reading... What are we reading right now?
Right now, we're reading The Nightingale, which actually has nothing to do with...
Anything.
Yeah, but...
So it isn't always about race?
Oh, no.
Okay.
There are times you have to back off and do something different.
Yeah.
Yeah, because...
Just to take a break.
The book before that was something called Push Out, which had to do with racial imbalance in the way black girls are treated in schools. And after having had that discussion, we were ready for something...
Lighter. Yeah.
And although this book is Second World War, you know, French, German occupation of Paris, it was lighter because it was way back then, I guess.
And not about necessarily about race.
Right.
We did White Fragility. Mm-hmm. And we've done...
White Trash.
Coates' books.
Yeah, Ta-Nehisi Coates' books. Between the World and Me.
Two or three of his.
Right. But then we also, in between some of those, have read The Kite Runner and...
Cutting for Stone,
my favorite.
So we do try and read books that have some good discussion in them.
Yeah.
I will say that.
The key is to be able... Is there something there to talk about?
So the other thing we do is sometimes we go to movies together.
Mm-hmm.
So that's gotten harder. We all seem to be very busy. But we've gone to several movies together. We used to go out to lunch once in a while, but the group's gotten kind of big. Mm-hmm. What else have we done? Oh, we do hearts. We have huge red hearts that have no printing on them. And so for the National Day of Racial Healing... In February, we stand on the street corners with our hearts, which talks about love, which shows love. We don't talk about anything when people say, what is that about? We just say it's about love,
okay,
meaning loving
so
everybody.
So you do a little community outreach,
yeah.
Too.
Yes. And after the last school shooting that they had, we pulled those hearts out, and it wasn't February. It was actually warm enough to be outside. And we were... stationed over one of the overpasses at 94 Capitol Avenue, and you could have heard the trucks blowing their horns as they went by to recognize who are these people up here with these red hearts. it was an image.
Yeah. As we close this up, what one lesson have you both come away with after your years with Sacred Conversations that you would like others to consider?
A couple for me. One is, I think racial healing is only going to happen if it happens in your heart. And it happens when you get to know people.
Relationships.
Everybody needs to be valued as a human being. And I think you need to take the time to move into uncomfortable spaces, if that's what it is for you, and to really get to know people and to understand that we're all the same. We actually are all the same. We have the same dreams and goals and backgrounds and everything. And the relationship part is really important to me. And I have learned so much. And I will never have learned it all. But it's a lifelong journey. Yeah,
it's a
place to continue learning.
I think for me, it's the importance of allowing yourself to get to know another person, to get to know who they are and what they really feel, because we have a tendency to want to jump to conclusions. You just see me and you assume you know it, and that is not true.
Well, thank you so much, both of you, for coming in and for doing what you do. You have to start in your own neighborhood. You have to start in your own community to make a difference, and you're doing that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.